Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You know, I grabbed her like any mother. I had no idea what had happened to me, no idea what happened to her. And she said, Mommy, they took me in the star flasher beds, and they took me to the Pleiades, and they took me to Arcturus. And this is a 5-year-old. I had no idea how she knew those words.
My guest is Sandy Corcoran. Now, I could go into all of the things that she's done, but I could never tell it as good as she does. And not only that, there's stuff that is totally very beyond explanation that she does. So we're going to get into this way. I was looking, getting ready for the interview this morning through my closet for whatever reason, and I picked up a book in the bookshelf there it just came to me. It's on dolphins and our dolphin ancestors. Now, there's a reason. There's always a reason. So, Sandy, I'm curious why this might have come up, because you are a shamanic practitioner, so there might be something to do with that, but hi there. And that's my question for you. So it's your turn.
All right. So I guess the easiest way to explain how I would see that, or the synchronicity of you pulling that from your closet, is one of my primary mentors, an Indigenous woman named Grandmother Twilaneach, came from the Seneca people, who were one of the Iroquois Six Nations people. And she was my mentor for a very long time after my daughter had passed. And she believed that there are many star nations that have come to the different tribal or cultural eras in the Earth's history, and that she believed her people had come from Ceres B, which has to do with the dolphin people and somewhat with the cat people as well. Although Lyra has more of the cat people, the Ceres B, which was never really discovered. I mean, the Nomo in Africa knew about them long before we even had them in our scientific studies. But I do think maybe the dolphins, which are the ancestors, they keep the wisdom, they sing the songs of the ocean, they open up the portals. I think that maybe that's why you picked it up this morning.
And there have been conversations recently that are revolving around stargates, portals, windows, doors to other realms. And I've experienced some of this myself in a time shift or a dimension shift. And these, I think right now, there's and you want to call it a thinning of the veil. I guess maybe that's the best way to approach it. But something is happening. Our vibration is shifting. Our frequency is becoming, I think, a little higher. And that doesn't mean bad or good. That just means different. Why? What's happening? What are we doing with this energy?
Well, I think that there are different epochs on this planet that assist us in our evolutionary processes. And we're going through both an astrological and a planetary process right now between the solar flares, the photon belt, being in alignment with the sun of galactic center. Every 26,000 years or so, we shift. But when you hit that midway point, it's when things really start to infuse energetically into the planetary system. So every planet is changing at this time, not just Earth, and she will ascend with or without us. But so many people think that the ascension process is about getting out of your body, being at a higher frequency. And really what it's about is descending fully into matter, into your body. This is the vehicle for us here to make the transition. But it's all based on the vibrations of being able to hold light and love. And so a lot of what's happening right now in the energetic shift that we're experiencing is people are going through these feelings of the veil is thinning, time is speeding up, there's a lot of deja vu, portals are opening up all over the world energetically, and they're access points for us to be able to start to vibrate at a higher frequency so that as we understand or remember our fourth, fifth, and sixth dimensional beingness, we'll be able to see, feel, touch, smell at different levels because we're already that. We're just not cognizant of that yet. But we already occupy all those different dimensions. And so it's a point of remembering and holding that memory at a frequency where we also experience it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, I'll share this. When I had a mind shift and I was meditating, I was laying on the bed, and the memory that I have is somehow being immediately up near the ceiling, looking down at the body on the bed. And on the bed, I could see with my that spirit eyes, I could see myself also in another state of being like a tiny sun, a star. It was about the size of a basketball. It was glowing. It was gold. It was, you know, an orb, sun, whatever. But it also had awareness because from that sun, I was looking directly underneath to my body, and I'm just hovering right there above the body. I could see from that vantage point. And so I knew I was a three. I was in three places, and each of them had awareness. And that changed my perception of reality. So in terms of knowing we are multidimensional, right there, in a nutshell, it gave me a clue.
One of the access points actually is the dream time, because when we disengage into the astral planes, we're able to move and shift. And a lot of people are having dreams now that they've never had before, where we're able to be aware in the dream time of ourselves in other lifetimes or frequencies, but time is not linear. It's all happening concurrently. And so when you shift into those liminal spaces where you're within what you just experienced in yourself, your soul-centeredness, your star self, your matter, that body that's still sleeping, and your astral body, which is above looking down, we have so many different layers of frequency that we belong to because we are the I and the I am. So we're learning to experience ourselves at greater and greater and greater waves of awareness.
That, I think, in some ways, it's incredibly exciting. And at the same time, it can be a little bit disconcerting when you find yourself all of a sudden in a different state of awareness. It's like, okay, what do I do now? Where do I go? You know, the dream plane, where we do a lot of our remembering and our learning and our reconnecting, I think right now is where more people are beginning to realize they're actually remembering their dreams. And what do you do with that? Because sometimes it's foreign material, and all of a sudden you have to figure out how to unpack it. Can you help with that?
I think the best way to describe that is what you experienced or what I experienced in the dream time, or what people experience when they're at these sacred sites and open portals, when you have a near-death experience. All of those things are your higher self's way of making the unconscious conscious. And once it falls into your consciousness, you don't question it anymore. It's kind of like, I'll give you an experience. I think, you know, I worked with John Mack and have had a lot of inter and multidimensional events happen with me. Somebody once was bringing in all this information at a dinner party about, oh, go hear this speaker about UFOs and go hear this speaker about UAPs. And this person had an experience, and myself and another who were at the table who had both worked with John, we weren't saying much of anything. And her husband leaned in and said, this doesn't interest either of you, does it? And we said, no, because once you've had the experience, you don't need to prove it. It's there. It's embedded. You've embodied it. And you don't need to prove it anymore.
There are people who are seekers, continuing to go to session after session after session, hoping to get it. And right now, it's the easiest time to get it, and you don't have to go anywhere.
It's all about being. It's all about being centered. You know, when we project into the future, that's the mental body pulling us into something that we think might happen or somebody might do to us. Or when we're remembering our old stories, hurts, pains, betrayals, that's our emotional body. It's pulling us to the past. Unless we're in the now, unless we can just be and draw our attention back every time we find ourselves projecting forward or sadly thinking backwards, that's when we're in alignment with spirit. And that's a direct link between what your higher self knows and what your 3D spacesuit body knows. And it's hard. It's hard to be in this world. It's chaotic. It's dissonant. It's coming at you a mile a minute. Plus, we're also going through these frequency changes. So people are having a really tough time right now. And it is about meditation or prayer or taking that moment just to breathe. Once you take that breath, you've brought yourself back into center. You might have to do that many times during the day because in our day-to-day, we're pulled out of ourselves all the time. But that's the simplest way of doing it, to take a breath.
The book is Shamanic Awakening, My Journey Between the Dark and the Daylight. And I like there was a presentation you gave where somebody was concerned about the dark. And there is the, you know, the dark night of the soul, the shadow element. Every day we express our own being in dark and light. It's part of us, all of us as a whole. But your answer was the light always wins.
Yes. And the reality is everything is a singularity. But when we're on the earth plane, we're experiencing duality. So it's light and dark. It's good and bad. It's male and female. It's fire and water. It's earth and the heavens. It all comes into a singularity, and that singularity is where we exist. That singularity is, for lack of a better word, where infinite intelligence, the supreme being, exists. And once we get into the day-to-day, we're pulled out of that into, again, light and dark, good and bad, and we're being flooded with that right now. But the light will always win because in the beginning, there was that spark of consciousness, and that is light.
And I think that's who we are. When I saw myself as that glowing orb, that ball of light, that felt like home. And it was that, and I've had experience where I was in a flash, I should say, a blink of an eye, all of a sudden I was everywhere and everything. And there was no need to be, I didn't feel any need to express anything outside myself because I was everything within that space. That was amazing. I wanted to stay there. And the guides who put me into that state had only given me a 2 second, you know, one, the count of two, and you're going to come back. It's like, darn it. I want to stay. No. And knowing that if I didn't come back, it wasn't going to be good. Okay. So I knew, all right, I have to come back and center. We're good with this. But that sense of beyond self, beyond knowing and still knowing is, I think if everyone could have that experience, we would have a different world. But at the same time, we're not supposed to do it. We're supposed to be here. And so how do we get through the day-to-day, like you're talking about, it's all chaotic, and coming back to center? At one point you said, it's how you focus and where you focus that brings the energy to you. And starting from your own experience of being in a normal 9-to-5 world, doing everything just pretty much what we would experience in a Western culture society, going to work, coming home. And yet a Native American woman approached you and said, I'm here to teach you. And your life spiraled into an entirely different direction. So how do we do that? Because that is mind-boggling.
Well, I think, unfortunately, human beings learn the hard way or with hard things. And that came about from the death of my first daughter. And, you know, you're in these spaces when you encounter death where it's so separate from what you want to experience, and you have to enter the dark alone. And in that particular place of pain, and pain is part of our journey, this First Nations woman basically came to me and said, you promised spirit that you would allow some of us to teach you, and now is the time. And I really argued with her because, like you said, I was this blonde suburban teacher, and that made no sense to me. And I argued with her quite a bit that I didn't make that promise, and who did she think she was? And at that point, she said to me, I lost my daughter too, my first daughter too. And I never had told her that. I had never said why I was so depleted and sad and crying and not wanting to be here. She ended up passing me to another teacher who would be my primary mentor for 14 years, another Native American woman. And she had lost one of her children too. And so you have this fragile existence between life and death. And I think that for me turned my whole world around. And it really was, I have to say that the death of my first daughter put my feet to the path, and the life of my second daughter kept me here because I had a very difficult time keeping pregnancies. And the teachers put me through a Native American ceremony, and I became pregnant in that ceremony with my husband. It was the only thing he ever agreed to. And out of that came my beautiful, gorgeous, grown-up woman daughter. And she's my best friend and a constant joy in my life. But that moment of severe pain and doubt and just darkness is what brought such a profound light in every aspect of my world. My teachings, my mentors, my daughter, my work, the work I do all over the world that I just love. I have such gratitude for it, but it all came from that moment of darkness and pain.
What you're describing is duality. It's the complete and total opposite of light, where it's the depths of despair, of loss, of grief, of a feeling of complete and total emptiness, then to the fullness that you now are expressing and sharing and encouraging others to open up to. There, I think you have to walk through it to get to the other side where you can, as those women did, embody the healing that comes from that.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I think we're given example after example in our world about that. People who go through horrible situations, and they come out the other side with the ability to have compassion or unconditional love or to serve those that hurt them. I think humanity as a whole is a very profound, precious thing. And I do think a lot of people are awakening and changing their consciousness. I know it looks dark to a lot of people when you look out there. You know, we still have so many wars and destruction and pedophilia and anger and religions that are fighting each other. And to me, it's so simple, but it's only so simple because of what I've been brought through. And I don't think everybody needs that to become conscious or aware or have some form of unconditional joy and love. But I do think so many people get caught up in what's wrong that they forget what's right in their lives. And I think more people have to concentrate on that.
You experience what you focus on. And so your focus is really, really powerful, even though it seems like it was just a thought. It was just an idea. It was, I didn't really mean that. And all of a sudden things change. And so that, I think, is what you're doing by taking people on the tours, because you travel. Now, let's go back. Immediately, you were working with women. And then at one point they said, okay, now it's time for you to work with the guys. Was that a shock?
What was a shock is most of the, you know, back in the day, most of the workshops were being given by men. So most of the workshops early on, before all these other happenstances happened in my world, I was listening to men authors and men workshop facilitators and scientists and quantum physicists. And then all of a sudden, once the women started teaching me, I have a really unique little moment when I was sitting in a tribal situation and all the men are over there chatting and building the fire and talking to each other. And the woman is sitting very quietly on the side. This was on one of my trips in Peru. And I was like a little pissed off. I wanted to be up at the fire. I wanted to be doing what they were doing. And the woman looked at me and they said, "Look how silly they are. We're talking about our history, our children, the star beings. And they're over there building a fire thinking they're great." And essentially what they were saying to me is there needs to be duality. There needs to be two single things. So in the Native tradition, the man always walked in front of the woman. And I asked, why is that? Does he think he's superior? And they said, no, he's protecting our stomachs because life comes from our wombs. And I thought, wow, do we have it asked backwards sometimes? Coming out of the generation of the 60s and Me Too, we're trying to strive towards something that puts us in a category almost above. And we're supposed to be equal to, but we both bring equal to what the other one needs. And I think it's not about having a place. I think it's about knowing your place, knowing who you are, knowing what you have to offer as a woman, and counterintuitively, knowing what you need to get from a man. I think so many people go into relationships trying to plug into what they lack in themselves, and it never works out. You have to be able to kind of be your whole person to come into a situation with another individual, whether it's a friendship or a colleague or a sibling or a partner, and know who you are and allow them to be who they are so that you can come together in some kind of synchronicity. Otherwise, it's always this push and pull. I'm right. No, I'm right. I'm better. Doesn't work that way. Just doesn't work that way.
When we look at everybody as an adversary, as in less or more, I'm better, you're not, all of that adversarial kind of competition. Competition is divisive. I remember as a kid, when I was competing in track, I made friends with someone from another school, and the peer group I had, they were just uncomfortable with that. It was not supposed to happen. As a result, though, when I competed with that person, we each excelled. And her mom asked me why I did that. I said, because I love working with her. When I jumped 16.8, she jumped 17.2. But I wouldn't have jumped 16.8 without the encouragement, the catalyst, the challenge. And I loved that. That isn't a normal in my experience and in competitions to be friends with the people who are your adversaries. It isn't seen as normal, but I think it should be. I think that's the way we all continue to strive, evolve, and grow in our own being. And so when you're looking at someone and saying a negative, instead say, how can I excel? How can I learn? How can I improve? What can I bring to the table? And it's a completely different way of thinking that I do think we are going to develop as we ascend, which is a word that, again, is another hot button word. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And I think, you know, in a lot of the Native traditions, especially in South America, if you were the winner to the top of the mountain, you had to teach all the others how to run as fast as you. Because the idea is not everybody is going to be the same, and not everybody is going to win, and not everybody is going to be perfect. That's one of the negative things I see with cultures today. Every kid gets a trophy. We're not teaching our kids anything if every kid gets a trophy. The expectation is then I don't have to try because I'm going to get the trophy. I think when we're challenged to commit to helping other people be the best they can be, then we're making the choice to look at a challenge as a gift that we can offer another, or a gift we can learn for ourselves. You know, that's why one of the taglines when I do my therapy with people is, if you want to change your story, you have to change your script. You know, if you want to sit on my couch and complain about your mom or your dad for week after week, that's not what I want to work with. I want to challenge you to be a better you and to let go of the old story that's limiting you from being a better you. And challenging yourself is part of the bigger challenge in life, whether it's to win the trophy, jump 17-2, run to the top of the mountain first. No. Challenge is a good thing.
I agree. Yeah, I think, and it doesn't mean you're doing it for someone else. When you're saying you're teaching them, you're saying, this is what you can do or what I did. And maybe they have a better way of doing it. It isn't about clones. It's about, okay, it right. can be done. It can be done. How can you do it? Or how can you help someone who is doing it?
Yeah, how can you cheer them on? You know, we don't cheer each other on very often in this society. How would I best serve my clients if I cheered them on, as opposed to if I listened to their story week after week? How would I challenge the people I take to different countries, be it Peru or Egypt or the south of France, if I didn't challenge them to be outside their element and skin, try new food, see new people, learn about new vibrations, learn what makes them uncomfortable, learn what makes them joyous? Those challenges help us grow. And I think that's everybody's birthright, is to grow. It's a choice, though. We all have a choice.
For me, the metaphysical surprises are the most fun. When you see something, and I've had people when they've come to me and said, this is what happens for me, and then demonstrate. A woman who lost her son, she was sitting at the table and she said, every time I know he's here, this is what happens. And she showed me her necklace and she said, you know, this will come off, the pendant that's on here, it will come off. And as she's telling me about this, the pendant comes off the necklace. There's no way that that is physically possible in our world and our reality, but it was right there. And a couple, maybe it was last weekend, my husband is at the door with the key and the key comes off the keychain. There's no way that can happen, but these things happen. It's like every time, touchdown, touchdown, something else is happening here and we are not in control. I like that.
Yeah. And I like that too, because if you pay attention, something magical is happening around you every single day. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, and you take that moment of, oh, that's different, or oh, that's unique, or oh, that was a challenge, or oh, look at that, you can find magic in every single solitary day. It might be little, it might be bigger, it might be right in front of your face, it might be in a liminal space. But to me, that's the joy of life, is finding the magic in it every single day.
Okay, in your book, we get to chapter 9, and we go down the rabbit hole.
Yes, we did.
Okay, did we come back out?
Yes. Did you want me to speak about that?
Of course, of course. We want to go where the fun is.
Okay. Well, there were two experiences that were really outside the bounds of my understanding. The first one happened, I guess it was during the STAR conference that John Mack put on in, I don't know, 97 or 98. And he had physicists there. He had Edgar Mitchell there. He had Native American shamans there. And I was in the audience because I was getting weird information from some of my clients in terms of experiences they've had, and it always made me really uncomfortable. So I went to the lecture to hear what was happening, and they had a breakout group at one point where there were four experiencers or contactees on the stage talking about their experiences. And there was one man in particular who kept brushing his hair back, and it was just agitating me so badly. And when he turned to the side, I noticed that he didn't have his other arm. And I went into this whole experience of remembering being on the ships, remembering what was happening to me, remembering that he and I were on the ships for many times with other children. And I kind of fled the room. And I went out onto the porch and bumped into Edgar Mitchell, and Edgar was having a cigarette and said, do you want one? And I was so shaken. And he just looked at me and said, sometimes things happen that we simply don't understand. And he turned around and walked away. And later I contacted John Mack's clinical assistant and kind of had a breakdown telling her this story. And she told me that the man that I was talking about had been talking in his sessions for weeks about the blonde woman, and he didn't want to be on the stage because when the little blonde girl found him, he knew that what he experienced was real and not just made up in his mind. And throughout many sessions, they finally allowed us to meet each other. And we were one of only three people taken to the Human Subjects Committee at Harvard that Dr. Mack was working with in terms of contactees and abductees and experiences. And all three of those categories are different ways of how people saw their own experiences. And the second thing you're talking about in terms of the rabbit hole is I woke up one night and there were three beings as one at the bottom of my bed, and they were telling me that everything was okay. And there was another little being next to my bed, and I couldn't scream, I couldn't sit up, I couldn't move, I was frozen. My husband was sleeping next to me. It was like he wasn't aware of anything. And I watched my daughter go down the hall floating and then lost consciousness. And when I woke up in the morning, it was about 4, I ran out and she was in the backyard in her nightgown swirling around. And, you know, I grabbed her like any mother. I had no idea what had happened to me, no idea what happened to her. And she said, Mommy, they took me in the star flasher beds, and they took me to the Pleiades, and they took me to Arcturus. And this is a 5-year-old. I had no idea how she knew those words. And all she wanted to do was draw pictures of them. And then she very conspiratorially said to me, but we can't tell Daddy, he'll never understand. And later that morning, I called my mentor that I mentioned earlier, Grandmother Twyla, and just said, you know, I'm falling apart. I need to know what all of this is. And that's when she started to talk to me more about the Star Nations. But those two incidences were so far out of my normal context of reality. And yet both of them now are so, the experience is so profound in terms of my knowing what's happening during these timelines, my knowing that we'll be safe, my knowing that they're not there to hurt us, my knowing that they've been on this planet forever. And that's the rabbit hole. And if you go down the rabbit hole, you also have to come out of the rabbit hole. And a lot of people didn't believe me, but I found enough people between my native teachers and John and a couple of other people that made me realize I've been given a great gift of remembrance.
There was a thing that I got, which is interesting, because I, you know, little notes, little messages, little synchronicities. Earlier I was meditating and it said, we're going to give you an experience and you're not going to remember. And you're not going to remember and mm-hmm. we're going to give you an experience. And I said, no, you're not. This is programming. I know what you're doing. And yes, I'm going to remember. So stop it. but I'm at a different place in my life now. And these experiences that I've had, seeing the portal open, seeing the beings at the, and these were cloaked beings. So at the bottom of my bed, when they said, she's awake, and they had a clipboard and they were kind of tall and they had hoods. I could not see their faces. And my husband didn't wake up and they're standing there. And as soon as they said, she's awake, because I was hearing them talking and knew that somebody said my name, and they just vanished the minute they said, she's awake. I was so irritated because they were in my space and they were doing something clandestine and I needed to know. This was probably about 30 years ago. Anyway, so that was my first thing of, who are these people and why are they, what are they doing? What are they doing in my space? I was so irritated.
Well, the irony is they're always in your space. So they just became vapor,
yeah.
But they were still there,
yeah.
Probably teaching you. And and to not remember is sometimes a gift, because if you're not ready to remember and to use that information, you know, you can see a lot of people that are disassociated because of some experiences which they might have remembered too soon. I'm not saying there's not mental illness out there. I know there is, but I do think some people who are mentally ill are really not mentally ill. They're just either working on a different timeline or a different plane, or they've been given information that they can't integrate yet. And so it makes them look crazy.
Yeah.
And they're not.
Well, and that's the thing. You each of us deals with this in our own way, and we have to figure out what is real and how much reality we want to know. One of the friends that I worked with before said, okay, you're going to go in a dark room and be in the dark space, and you're going to practice seeing in the dark. Now, when you see stuff, don't freak out, because it's been there all along. You just couldn't see it. So just get a grip and understand, if you want to see this, you're going to see it, and you're going to have to remember, don't panic. I love that. Don't panic. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
And I think that's really important in this time now, because as the veils are getting thinner, and as people are remembering, and as the liminal spaces are becoming more obvious, and as the unconscious is becoming more conscious, some people aren't ready to handle it. Or some people have no file cabinet in which to put it. But that doesn't mean it's not existing. And it doesn't mean that it is bad, or that you have to fear it, because as soon as you project that energy, you know, fear, it's the lowest vibration we can have. And I think when you stay in a resonance of fear, everything around you becomes scary. Then you have to attack it or be greedy around it or defend yourself. And if you can see it more like you did, out of curiosity, when you looked down from the ceiling and saw the ball of light and your body underneath that, then you get to start to question, what was that? And you get to figure those things out, and you get to go down your own rabbit hole. I think those are experiences that help us grow. And fear is probably the most limiting thing for everybody to experience something grander.
I was told the experience from the others, don't be afraid, because fear is holding you back. And I said, it's okay. I've had these experiences. My life was threatened one time, and I'm good with that. I'm not afraid. Sure enough, 3:00 in the morning, in the corner of the room, I heard a mechanical voice say my name, Winnie. Okay, well, this voice sounded artificial. It was completely foreign. And so my automatic response was the fight or flight. I froze. I felt my whole body go stiff. And then I heard them laughing. Chuckle, 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 chuckle. We told you, you have to get over your fear. Oh, you mean the fight or flight thing. The thing that's programmed into us for survival. Oh, that. Okay. Yeah, I get it. But that was a demonstration, a very gentle and very important demonstration of how that works. And so this is what they're trying to, I believe, others who are around us in many shapes, forms, dimensions, are trying to help us evolve to knowing we are more than what we seem. We are more than the physical body. We are more than what our minds say. We are beyond belief, incredibly powerful creators. And I love that this is what you have delved into from the entire spectrum of going into it from many different cultural vantage points to say, look, explore, believe, empower yourself, and travel. I think the traveling is what really gets people off the mark.
Yeah, I think travel is really important. It brings people, like I said earlier, out of their comfort zone. It gives them an opportunity to see different in the world. Once you see different and know it's not going to hurt you, you're not afraid of it. I've been blessed to have so many opportunities where these different cultural groups have now become friends, and I've watched their children grow, or they get married, or I'm brought into their families. You know, one of the things that brought me to the Middle East is my brother was on the second plane in 9/11. And I don't often talk about that, because that was so difficult for my family, because it was such a global experience. There was almost no privacy to it. My family was very upset that I wanted to travel to the Middle East. And my thing was, I'm not going to hate a group of people for something some people did, because every race and every creed and every color has done something mean to another race, creed, or color. Now I go one or two times a year to Egypt and take people there to experience the wonder of that magnificent country. That came out of my own need to reconcile something I didn't want to hate. something I didn't want to fear, and a group of people that didn't do anything to me.
I was on the air that day, and working in a newsroom by yourself, this is a single person operation, so basically it's headlines, and dependent on the talk guys in the other room to give me something, information, if it, you know, if it came across that I didn't see it, they're watching the TV, I didn't have that. And one of the guys came in on a little piece of scratch paper. The plane hit the trade, one of the towers, twin towers. And I'm looking at him and thinking, I have just a few seconds to go on the air and having to trust. And that was the time that I decided I can't continue doing this as a career profession. Because what happened at that moment when everything started to shut down, I mean, I was able to see it and I was able to broadcast it, but I realized how vulnerable the person in that position is with no access to anything to corroborate it, no access to knowing who the actual culprit might be, all of the conspiracies that sprang up out of that with people not knowing and people being frightened and doors being locked and having to turn in your pass key, the whole nine yards. We went from having open skies to lockdown, in a sense, with everybody being afraid of who might be a potential threat. And that changed me because I thought, I can't live like this. I can't live like this. I have to go a different direction. And I loved doing that. The broadcasting, I thought, was going to be where I went. But I, at that point, decided, no, I want to be part of the group that's living, not the group that's sitting there behind the glass window. Does that make sense?
It makes sense because that has been done to us a couple of times. I don't think we know the full history of, let's say, John F. Kennedy's assassination or 9/11 or COVID or the next flap, which is going to be afraid of all these UAPs that, our government has already back engineered since the 50s. I think there is a level of control beyond even politics. I'm not talking red, blue, and purple. I think there's a level of conspiracy of trying to control the masses. And every single one of those situations was to clamp down another level of fear on the masses so that they're more controllable. But I think every single one of those situations had an agenda. And that's just my feeling. I don't want to get into it further than that. But it's real clear to me that none of those situations were fully what we were told they were.
Okay, so if you get into this stuff with Philip K. Dick, who is an absolutely astounding, brilliant guy, but discounted at the time while he was alive because of potential drug-induced beliefs or his own believing that he might be in some way crazy because he thought he was being watched, surveilled, and then he found out he was. He said, thank God, I'm not crazy. Nobody wants to be surveilled and have their house broken into, but you know what? I found out it was real because they broke into my house and now I know. It's like, all right. Well, he wrote about the kind of stuff that Vance Packard, I think, brought up in, I think the book was 1957 when it was published, about the hidden persuaders. There's a lot of persuasion, but there's even more. It goes deeper. And recently, I was kind of zoned in, zoned out, watching a show that I had seen multiple times when on the screen, I see a word. And the word should not be there. And you have a tenth of a second, I think a tenth of a frame that they put these in so you can see it. The word is debrief. And so I went ahead and posted and said, this is what I saw. This is what's being put into our media. This is a streaming program on Netflix. Like I said, I saw it multiple times. I knew it wasn't supposed to be there. But then again, is it in this reality? Is it in a separate reality? It's like the little thing that came across, I think it was 1977 when they had the insert over the, I think it was a British program, talking about the ET, saying we're here, we're observing, and they never could track it down. Mm-hmm. Okay, these things happen. And my thing is they're challenging us to wake up, pay attention, get out of lockstep, do your own thinking, and ask who's running the program. Because in some way, something can prod us and encourage us and inspire us or trick us into doing something that isn't in our own best interest. Seeing that little thing on the screen, I thought, oh my gosh, it's the smoking gun. It isn't just happening on this level. There's subliminal stuff from all different dimensions and directions asking us to, I think, wake up and trying to see who's paying attention, Who caught that? Who saw that? Who's noticing? And you have a different awareness because you've been to these states of in-between, of knowing this is how it works and this is how you can connect. So as you're talking to people right now and you're telling them these things are becoming more prevalent, the liminal, the in-between, what can you do to help so that they don't lose their grip and say, it's just my imagination, and deny and go into a deeper, I think, lockdown mode, zombie mode, because it's frightening. How do we deal with that?
I don't think everybody can deal with it, to be honest with you, Wendy. I think some people do want to numb out. I think for some people, Netflix and their six pack, and I'm not, this isn't a criticism or judgment, but Netflix and their six pack and television is where they go because there's so much bombarding us. I think the shakeups we get, the man behind the curtain who's trying to keep us suppressed or in fear or down or hating each other, I think you have to want to know differently and want to believe differently. And I think more and more people are believing differently, but there's still so much to dissect. There are those beacons of light that are trying to get us to wake up, and just as much there are those dark, you want to call them black ops, that are trying to keep us in a certain place because it serves that operation to keep us at a lower level. But I don't, you know, it's like I said in that podcast, light is always going to win. At some point, humanity is going to fully wake up. And the Earth is already doing that. The red spot on Jupiter is getting smaller. Saturn has lost one of its rings. It's because our whole solar system right now is transitioning into a new phase, and the dark can't go with it. That's why you're seeing the last throes of it so much all over the world right now, because the dark won't be able to vibrate to what the light is bringing, and the light is here. And it's all of us needing to remember that. The light's already here.
Yes, and we're part of it. We're part of it. It came with us and it goes with us if we can connect to that. I was going to say, I had a prod again, and this was, you can't handle the truth. And I thought, wait a minute. It wasn't a negative. It wasn't a discount. It's that intense. And so you need to be prepared if you really, really want to know the truth. And when you're saying, yeah, watch Netflix and stuff, well, that's what I was doing. And all of a sudden, boop, wake up. The can't handle the truth is a thing of saying, prepare yourself. Get ready. This is going to explode
right
in our reality. And it's going to be like a, oh my God, oh my God, infinity, oh my God. And that's what's happening. So to me, it's like, this is a fantastic time to be here. Now it's got its ups and downs. But if this is what we're going through, we're being shown in terms of our history, our awareness, our reality, that it isn't what it seems. And there are going to be challenges, but we're here for that. We're here for that.
I'm so excited about this timeline. And don't get me wrong, I watch Netflix all the time. I mean, sometimes you just need to shut down and turn off.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, to stay aware and awake 24/7, 365 degrees, I don't think we're all built like that yet. But we're coming to that. We're, you know, we're stepping into that new frequency where the longer we can hold the, I am okay right now, and I do not need to fear or hate anybody because they're different. The more often we can do that, the more we're in alignment with where this planet's going. And that, like my native teacher said, she's going to evolve. She'll shake us off like fleas on a dog. And we can go with her or not. But the evolution is going to take place. And we're in that now. This whole journey has been an evolution of consciousness. And I'm really hopeful. I am very excited about what's happening right now.
I like what Edgar Mitchell said to you, just in passing, and then he walked away. He just kind of dropped that little nugget.
Yeah, sometimes it gets complex sometimes, is what he said to me verbatim. And I was just like, you think?
Well, he had a clue, and he left breadcrumbs. He tried to do the best he could with saying, okay, you know, once he had that moment, the overview moment, and then decided to do what he did in terms of establishing a resource for people who also have their own overview moments or try to create them. He gave people an idea that there's more to reality than what we see, and we are part of it.
And every day there are people like that are willing to bring you to a point of it's bigger than you think it is, and you're a part of it, and you're safe. And, you know, there's so many people through eons of time that are there as way showers and light keepers and directors to the next phase. I don't know. I think humanity is blessed in so many ways. I know this is a grand experiment. I know we don't have all the answers. I know that we wish we did have all the answers, but the reality is we do. We just haven't remembered them yet. And we're on a course to start to remember. I love that.
I want to go back to what we started with, the dolphin people and the cat people. What do we know? I mean, you got firsthand account, which I think is a privileged status, to be able to hear from someone who has those as part of their cultural heritage. So what can we learn from that?
Well, all the indigenous races, and especially all the First Nations people in the Americas, they all had different star systems that they believed their ancestors came from. The Lakota, you know, believe they came from the Pleiades, and some of the Seneca believe they came from Sirius B, as did the Nomo. As did the Dogon people who believed in the Nomo. I know in Egypt you see a lot of cat configurations because they believe that in the ancients of times, the Lyrians came here, and the Lyrians were, you know, human bodies with cat features. And then the Orions came here. I mean, it's in our history. It's just a lot of our history has been written by scientists or discoverers or religious people or misplaced aspects of what they really found. And more as we uncover things like Göbekli Tepe or the ruins that were just found as the ocean receded in Spain, that shows almost like a Stonehenge that predates Egypt 2,000 years. I mean, it's there. All those signs are there, and they're coming to light again for a reason, for us to remember who we are and where we've come from. But I think my personal belief is that when Earth was constructed, we were seeded by 13 different star nations, and we have all that DNA in us at some point. And even quantum physicists now are proving that within each of our DNAs, it goes back 14 generations. That's a long time. And if, in fact, our 2-strand DNA was shut down from a 12-strand DNA and we're coming back online to our 12-strand DNA, think of what we can remember from all the root races that seeded this planet as a grand experiment of evolution. It's infinite.
Yeah, it opens an entirely new, well, encyclopedia just of this is the wing that was shut out because it wasn't written history. It was oral history.
Right.
And that was discounted.
Right. And once it started to become written history, then you have the professors or the scientists or the governments that wanted to suppress certain things.
Yeah.
The truth will always come out. Truth has no agenda.
Well, I think right now it's a time for each of us to look in a different way at what's happening. And instead of saying, this is bad, this is awful, all these things are killing us, destroying us, well, we can overcome. They've been doing studies, research on the dogs that are in Chernobyl, and they've had to go back and try and see. There are, I think, two groups that have changed in their physiology. They're able to live and thrive in that system of radiation, and so they are immune to certain kinds of metals and radiation and a whole nine yards. They say, well, you know what? That might be something that will also helpful, be something we can learn from. And it might not be a death sentence because they have adapted. And not only that, the frogs that were green, they're black and they're thriving. They're just as healthy as the green ones. So it's like these things are teaching us that we're going to have to get over some of our beliefs that things are always going to end in the death of us and everything we know. We're going to have to overcome that, because what we have done is create a challenge on our planet that says these things are going to have to change, and we're the ones that are here to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't think that we're taught about death. Death is just transitional point, like life. You know, you have birth and you have life and you have death and you have stillness and you have rebirth. And some people maybe believe in reincarnation. I'm not talking that. I'm talking everything is energy. Everything evolves. Energy always changes its form. You know, we had dinosaurs and mastodons and all these other saber-toothed tigers in the past. We can prove that. Well, we're evolving as well. And 500 years from now, it might look very different on this planet. Doesn't mean it's bad, but it's evolved into what can survive on what has been created and or left behind. I think everything's just energy, and it's always in a different sine wave of movement.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to the next phase, which is coming up pretty quick.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, maybe quicker than we want, but you know, that thing of you may not be prepared, but you're ready. And so, you know, the preparation will happen, but you're ready, whether you want to be or not. These things are progress. They are present.
And you're here. If you weren't prepared for the next phase, you wouldn't be here. There are so many souls trying to be born on the planet at this point, because this is a huge quantum leap in evolution. And, you know, we have a planet that can only support like 3.5 billion, and we're up to 8.5 billion already. Something's going to change. There's a lot of people, souls, individuals that want to experiment and experience what's happening right now. What we're moving through is huge. It's actually a quantum leap in evolution, and a quantum leap in humanity, and a quantum leap in consciousness. It's a brilliant time to be here.
Okay, who's going to tell those souls, remember to read the fine print? I know I didn't. I didn't. It was like, it's not as easy as it looks, okay? You're going to have to do some work. I didn't read that part. It was really, really tiny. So, okay, just be prepared, kids. It's going to be fun, but it's going to require just a little bit of adjustment. There we go.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, you know, somebody should say something. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for what you're doing. And you give, I think, a lot of hope and a lot of perspective of how to get through the dark times and into the light times, and know that it's all the same. It's energy. It shifts. It changes. And we grow.
Yes. And however we transition through this, we'll be fine. Whether we stay, whether we pass, whether we come back, it's just transitioning our energy into a different form of energy, either here or someplace else. Because we're all part of the Godhead, however you want to explain that. I don't see it as a religion. I see it as consciousness. It's infinite. It's vast. It's incomprehensible to talk about, but we know we're part of it, and it is part of us. I often use in my lectures that we're like a disco ball, and we remember one facet of the disco ball, but we are the whole disco ball. And within that disco ball is the all that is. And we are a part of the all that is, and the all that is part of us. It's a singularity, but we're just experiencing duality right now here.
Website, starwalkervisions.com.
Yes. Thank you.
The book is Shamanic Awakening. And that was the one you kind of said, no, I'm not going to write this. I'm not going to write a book. Well, amazingly enough, there's a book, Shamanic Awakening, My Journey Between the Dark and the Day. And you stopped kicking your feet long enough to do some writing.
Yes, I did. and thank you for having me, Wendy. This has been, it's really enjoyable to talk to somebody else that you can go into depth with. And I appreciate you sharing some of your things as well. So thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Hopefully we're all going through this together. So we've got a team and there are a lot of people rooting for us, whether they're here in the physical or non-physical or completely on a different planet, in a different universe, in a different space and time. It's just an amazing thing to be here now. So yes, thank you. Thank you for doing what you're doing.
And you. You have happy holidays, however you're celebrating.
And thank you for listening. You can find the book and her information. Again, the website, starwalkervisions.com. Sandy Corcoran.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.